Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking Ex Machina.
Deuce Ex Machina, the video game?
Leave out the deuce, hold the Ex Machina.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hello, hi. Hi.
Out Now is a film podcast, which is Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 188, 188.
I think that's when we travel back through time, right?
Yeah, we punch it to 188. That's
188 miles per hour.
That's a long one, that's for sure.
Yeah. Need a lot of road.
Okay, so this is 188, and the main feature of the week is Ex Machina, the new sci-fi film from director Alex Garland, starring Oscar Isaac, Domhnall Gleeson, and Alicia Vikander. Joining us to discuss Ex Machina, we have from Fast Film Reviews. He is in the middle of studying for his Turing test. It's Mark Hoban.
Hi, everyone.
And from Cinemaxwell.com and the Real Topics podcast, he's dancing the night away with his robot companion. It's Maxwell Haddad.
Yo, yo, how's it going?
Tearing up the dance floor.
I know. Check this out, bro.
How are you two gentlemen doing tonight?
I'm resplendent.
Great. Glad to have you both back on here. Mark,
thank you for
having
us.
Maxwell, good to have you back. I know it's been a while since we've had Maxwell on the show proper. We just had you on a commentary track for Too Fast, Too Furious not too long ago, but now it's now you're back here.
Well, thank you.
And Mark, you know, one of our oldest stalwarts of the show, as I like to call him.
Yes.
Definitely the word that I constantly use when describing Mark Hope. we got a packed show this week. A lot of things happened, guys. Like, we had some big trailers. We got movies. We got all kinds of stuff out. I'm sure we've seen a number of things as well. So we're just going to dive right into it. And first things first, I was at the Star Wars celebration this week. This is the big, basically, it's similar to something like Comic-Con or WonderCon, except it's entirely focused around the subject of Star Wars. Good thing Star Wars happens to be a vast universe of things to explore, because there was certainly a lot to do over the course of 4 days that I was involved with. First things first, though, and I think we could just count this as part of trailer talk now. We'll do, this is trailer talk part one we'll do for the Star Wars trailer, because that happened. I was in a room full of Star Wars fans as we watched J.J. Abrams like parade around his cast and everything, but we wanted him to get to the point, which was the new Star Wars trailer. That's half joking, but that did happen, and we, you know, myself, the people in the arena, and you know, the world got to see, because it was live streaming, got to see the premiere of the brand new Star Wars: The Force Awakens trailer, which showed us a little bit more of what's going on here, including, you know, big teases of certain returning characters and what have you. But I'm going to stop before I get to more Star Wars stuff and ask you guys, what did you guys think of the trailer? Let's start with Maxwell.
I thought it was great. It just put a huge smile on my face. It made me feel like a kid again. Obviously, with the most recent Star Wars films, it's easy to want to be skeptical, but, you know, all my skepticism washed away as I was basking in the light of this new, very well-cut, very fun trailer with, as you said, some very nice surprise return characters to see there.
Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even need a trailer to be excited about this movie. I think it raises a lot of questions. So the nice thing that I appreciated about the trailer is that it doesn't really – it's not very spoilery. It's just kind of gives you a taste of some things. And, I mean, Chewie, we're home. That, like, what more is there to say than that?
Abe?
I definitely enjoyed this trailer quite a bit. I think right when the score hits, it gave me some goosebumps. And then, again, the visuals, it's just a splice of a bunch of visuals and some actors that are in it. Big fan of it. I was very, very excited to see it. I mean, as far as teaser trailers go, this is a huge teaser trailer in terms of just the definition of it, but also what I can come to expect in a real full-length trailer. And I'll probably just stop watching trailers after that.
What I like about this is that it feels, it's very much in the realm of trailers that I can appreciate for what they're showing me. And Abe, I know you try to not watch certain trailers at a certain point, but
yeah,
movies like this and people like Nolan and Snyder, I mean, just certain people, they definitely have control over their trailers. Like, and this, and Abrams is, you know, he's the man behind the mystery box. So he's the master of showing you what you might need, feel like you can see without revealing anything. And seeing a trailer like this is like, yeah, we're getting some glimpses, some teases, but we don't really know anything. I mean, obviously we learned some new facts that we might not have known beforehand, but it's not enough to certainly spoil an entire movie, but it's very much a way to give you a certain sense of just rousing nature. It's just awesome. I mean, like, like seeing X-Wing
you can't even speak. It's good.
It's fantastic. And yeah, and I know we're all big Star Wars fans. I'm certainly a big Star Wars fan. I was just at a 4-day convention for it. I mean, it's it was quite the feat to be like seeing this and being like, we have a new Star Wars movie coming, and it looks just like fantastic. So a lot of good stuff with that Star Wars and The Force Awakens, which arrived this Christmas in theaters. But other stuff that happened on the day, or on this whole weekend, this extended weekend, essentially. Before the trailer came out, the one thing I want to mention about the J.J. Abrams panel, like, this is, like, the big panel. Like, this is the one that everyone, like, lined up to, like, see. Like, if it was the equivalent of Comic-Con, it'd be the Hall H, where everyone just waits, like, you know, a day before to try and get in line for this thing. That said, you probably could have got in if you, even without camping. The funny thing about, like, camping out for something like this is, like, I don't try to get up and, like, get as close as I can, because it's not like I'm going to high-five J.J. Abrams and, like, be his best friend. So it's like, I just want to get a seat. So, like, I'm happy sitting in the bleachers where I'm, like, up high away from, you know, giant heads. I see a screen clearly. So with that in mind, among the things that happened, like, he brought out Oscar Isaac, Daisy Ridley and John Boyega, Moses for Life,
along with
Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Peter Mayhew, Anthony Daniels. Like, this is like a star-studded cast coming out.
Oh, by the
stage.
Way, why wasn't Harrison Ford there?
He was still recovering from that plane crash.
Yeah, crash of Millennium Falcon. Got it.
That said, he wasn't going to come anyway. He's Harrison Ford. He doesn't do this. So, like, that wasn't the thing that was going to happen. But they all, among the things they also brought out, they brought out R2-D2, the Chosen One, as they call him. And they also brought out B-88. BB-8.
BB-8.
I say that backwards. Because BB-8, the newest droid in the Star Wars family. And what's cool about this thing is it's entirely practical. And it's practical in a way where I can't explain how it works. It's a ball with a half a ball as a head on top of the ball. And the ball rolls and the head swivels around as if what's going on.
The only thing I can think is incredibly strong moving magnets.
Yeah, that's it too. Like, that's all I have. But it's so impressive to me that it's a cool effect that's real, and I can't explain it. That's my favorite kind.
It's magic.
So that was cool to see, like, on stage. What else happened? We got some more information on Star Wars Rogue One. This is the standalone film, which is actually a Star Wars anthology film. That is what it's officially going to be referred as, apparently. And this is, of course, the kind of spin-off episodes that don't correspond with the Skywalker timeline and are just more of things that happened in Star Wars history. And Rogue One, we learned, this is from Gareth Edwards, director of Godzilla and Monsters. He's making this movie, and the plot apparently revolves around a heist of the Death Star plans. So that takes place before or kind of parallel to A New Hope. And that's a cool idea. That is a cool premise. Do you guys have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a cool premise, and I was saying earlier is that I must not have been paying attention or didn't realize, but for some reason I assumed, other than, like, if they do origin story films, that most of the spinoffs would take place later in the timeline or concurrent with the new trilogy, but to hear that this is sort of going back in time is really exciting to me, to fill in some of these gaps. I wonder if any characters from A New Hope may return, like Porkins or anything like
Definitely
that.
Porkins. Porkins. Josh Gad is Porkins.
Yeah. In Star Wars the Musical. All right.
He's so cool. I'm excited for that. I mean, Gareth Edwards just seems fit for the job.
With that in mind, Felicity Jones is the only announced cast member so far, and I would not be surprised if she's maybe cast as a certain princess in this film. Just a thought. But she's also maybe a rebel soldier, but that could still be a... I don't know. We don't know. Who knows?
Interesting.
Food for thought. Let's see, what else? of things. I want to wrap up the Star Wars stuff. I know there's a lot of it, but I got a chance to watch panels that featured Ian McDiarmid, who plays Emperor Palpatine in the films, Ray Park, who's of course Darth Maul, Billy Dee Williams, who you know is of course the smoothest man in the galaxy. I got to watch a little bit of Episode 3 in 3D. It was a world premiere of that there, and I watched the opening of that because that's a cool part of that film, and I was like, I want to see how this works, and I was impressed for the most part. But the coolest thing I want to mention before we move on to other things is Star Wars A New Hope in Navajo. So this came out like a couple of years back now, like the actual release of this, but there's a documentary being made about what happened. And what happened, you might ask? It's Star Wars has a new language dub in Navajo. And why that's important is this is the first time a major motion picture has ever been dubbed in the language track of Navajo. That has not happened before, and Star Wars apparently was the perfect opportunity to utilize this. So various Native American, most likely Navajo tribe members, provided a all-new language track for Episode 1, and the panel that I attended featured a clip, like a good like 10 minutes of a documentary focusing on the process of making this happen. And then there's, you know, some of the people involved and the, you know, people that provided the voices came out and discussed the process, hearing about kind of what Star Wars mean, like how that, less about kind of the actual process of utilizing the language, but I should say that the process of doing this is complicated because of various dialects and the complication of the Navajo language, which is why it hasn't been done before. They're also talking about kind of how the Navajo and kind of the mythology of Star Wars really ties in very well in terms of kind of the balance of good and evil, the use of the Force and things of that nature. And it just seemed like a good fit in terms of like using this film as one to have that language track. And then they screened Episode 4. They screened A New Hope in with the track. I watched the first portion, basically just until C-3PO and R2 leave for Tatooine on the escape pod, just because I wanted to see what it sounded like. And it was pretty neat. Like they had like the subtitles below for those that, you know, haven't memorized Star Wars by heart, but I'm sure we all have, so who cares? But it was a cool thing, and like it was a panel that was not nearly as crowded as it could have been. Like this was a panel that should have had more people in it because it was just fascinating to kind of listen to and hear about. But
so who did the voices? I mean, is it anybody?
There's no, not to be kind of dismissive in terms of what I know about what Native American actors are of which tribe, but there's no Wes Studi, for example, or Adam Beach or anything. It's just more of people that have, that wanted to participate, that are among the Navajo tribe, that have, I guess, a talent for doing this kind of work.
Okay.
But certainly you can find, I know you can currently order this from Walmart. They sell copies of this track if you are so, you know, inclined to do so. And there's certainly more information online, including on Rant Hollywood, where I posted an article about the Star Wars Navajo in Navajo. Cool. So yeah, I'm going to wrap it up with the Star Wars talk there. I know there's other things we can get to, including a little thing we call Know Everybody, where each week we ask some questions to everyone on the panel and try to get the tone for the podcast going, and better get to
Know Everybody.
Thanks, Mark.
We got that one going.
Got it down.
Abe, why don't you start this one off?
Being a stalwart on the show doesn't, you know, I've been around.
So my question to you guys is, you guys are a genius billionaire mechanical engineer, electrical engineer. You're trying to build an AI. Do you make a gray box, a male or a female?
I'd like a buddy. I'd like a Jarvis type scenario, so I'd probably, you know.
So just a voice?
Well, just, you know, like a guy I can like sit on the couch with and he can compute stuff for me. You know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
To tie in both things we're talking about, I wouldn't do a gray box necessary. I'd do some sort of droid-esque robot, so it still has, you know, recognizable features, but no gender.
Hmm. Is R2-D2 a male or female?
He's R2-D2.
Okay, all right. That's great.
I think I would do the same thing, as just make it sort of droid-like, but not give the robot a sex. It would be more about the intellect, and so I think giving it a sex kind of it sort of becomes a little bit more about that than it does about the intellect of the being.
Well, I think one of the issues is if it's going to communicate, it needs a voice, so that's the voice will have to have a gender, but you could have a male voice or a female voice but still be asexual and, you know, nothing that would, you know, be for most people, of sexual desire.
All right. Cool. I have a question. What sort of competition would you enter you and your android companion into?
I mean, is there any doubt? Is it a dancing competition?
That's a good one.
Javelin.
There you go.
Javelin. My android would throw better than anyone could throw.
Gold medal.
Maybe art, an artistic competition.
Nice.
Like paint.
Chappie likes to paint.
Chappie likes to paint. Exactly. All right. Cool. Good answers, guys.
Yeah.
That's how you play.
No, everybody.
No, everybody.
I skipped over a few things, by the way, just because I was so
involved
in the Star Wars
talk.
Yeah. We do have a lot to talk about. But just to back up a bit, we have a new commentary track out for Daredevil. I know that was basically our episode
2003's Daredevil.
2003's Daredevil, yes, that's correct. The director's cut, more specifically, as well. We had a lot of fun with that one. It's
lots more Coolio.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Abe participated on there, first time seeing the movie ever.
Yep.
We also had Brandon Peters and Jim Dietz, who provided plenty of good comic information. And a lot of people have been, you know, responding quite well to that commentary track, and we certainly like doing them, and we like to do more of them. So stay tuned, because we have some good plans coming up based on a lot of the films that are coming soon to theaters. So there's some cool stuff on the way. Let's see. iTunes reviews and ratings. Good to get those. Helps out our show. Helps other people find our show. If you search Out Now with Aaron and Abe, you don't have to type all of that because our show comes up pretty quickly. Because we're just that popular. You can find our show. You can submit a rating. So type up a little review if you'd like to. It'd be very helpful. Helps us out. And we, you know, greatly appreciate it.
Thanks in advance.
There's other developments that might be happening in the near future.
We'll get to those.
But,
yeah.
There's some things in the works.
Yeah.
Some things in the works. Yeah. And
I'm intrigued.
You should be. Everyone should be. Everyone should be really excited about how great of a show we put on. Let's just put it that way. Not to toot my own horn, but I just sat on one. So anyway, we'll get to this at the end of the show as well. But I just want to put out right now, summer movies are coming up, guys, and that of course means that we have an annual summer box office gamble that we have to do as well. We'll talk more about that at the end of the show. But just be aware that hey, we like to have fun with what's going to happen this summer at the movies. All right, moving on. Let's do Out Now Quickies.
Tim?
Each week on Out Now, we have one main movie that we're talking about. We always have the movies that we see during the week that we're talking about. Quickies.
Tim?
The only thing I did backwards was say ickies and not quickies at the end of that sentence. But otherwise, freaking flawless.
Pretty decent.
With that said, Abe, have you seen any other movies this week or recently?
Pass.
No? Nothing?
I can't recall. Pass.
What have you been watching?
I've been watching a lot of Louis still. I watched season 4 and then I moved backwards into watching season 3 and 2 and 1.
Have you not seen Louis before?
No, I had not.
Oh my god, what are you doing?
So I'm caught up on Louis.
Get it together, Abe. Every week, I can tell you that. we're friends.
Fallen off the horse a few times.
Maxwell, have you seen any other movies recently?
Sure, I saw Unfriended, formerly known as Cybernatural.
Cool.
The gimmick was used pretty well. It was a decent little thriller movie. Not bad.
I also saw Unfriended this week, and I agree. I enjoyed it. I wasn't necessarily thinking I wasn't going to enjoy it because I heard good things coming out of South by Southwest, but I was, I think it's never great, but
no.
At the same time, I was describing it with a friend of the show, Peter Paris, actually. It's like, it's a B, but like, it's a really fun B. Like, it's not like it's a movie that you wouldn't necessarily say, you got to go see this. But when you hear someone say you saw, it's like, wasn't that fun? That's kind of the reaction I had. Like, it's a solid, like, teen slasher.
Yeah.
Of a neat idea for a premise. So this and Modern Family really nailed the let's take place all on one screen this year premise. I guess Mark didn't see Unfriended.
I did not.
Okay. Well, Mark, what did you see this week?
I saw Noah Baumbach's While We're Young, and I actually really enjoyed it. Noah Baumbach is really, overall, is not one of my favorite directors. But the last two films that he's done, actually, I've kind of responded to quite positively. And this one in particular is, without a doubt, my favorite film from him. And it basically has to do with this couple, Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts. They're in their 40s. And they're kind of wrestling with the idea of becoming older, essentially. And into their life comes this sort of young hipster couple played by Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried. And they it sort of plays out this sort of interaction between the two couples and kind of the older couple and the younger and what the older couple responds to the younger couple's sort of take on life. And it could have easily become sort of a comedy to make fun of people in some way, but in really nobody is ever really made fun of. It's actually very even-handed. There are good points and bad points about both couples, and it's kind of a very well thought out film. And for one of the things I don't care for Noam Baumbach's movies is the characters can often be quite unlikable. The Squid and the Whale was an example of that for me. But this actually, they're all very likable, and it's quite deep. Actually, I thought that the way the story plays out is quite well done. And Noam Baumbach has always been sort of been inspired quite a bit, I believe, by Woody Allen. And I think this is definitely something to anybody who is a fan of that director's work will definitely respond well to this.
Definitely heard of Woody Allen. He seems like a good upstart. I just saw While We Were Young as well, Mark. I mostly agree with everything you said. I wouldn't say that's my favorite Baumbach film. I really like Francis Ha from, is that 2 years ago?
Oh. Right. And I like Francis Ha as well, but this I definitely thought went deeper and had more to say. So I enjoyed it more.
I can certainly agree with that in terms of kind of what it's trying to do. And with that said, yeah, I agree with you about Noah Baumbach in general, or I do kind of. He can rub me the wrong way depending on what the film's trying to do. I like Squid and the Whale more than you did, but like Margot at the Wedding, I just really did not like at all. But I like Greenberg as well, also with Ben Stiller. But yeah, While We Were Young, certainly a solid film to check out. Definitely yes. Would recommend that as well. And since I saw both of those movies, that's what I had to talk about. So I'm good.
There you go.
All right, so that was Out Now Quickies.
Jim.
Let's move on now. Let's get to our other movie that we're going to talk in Trailer Talk. This is Trailer Talk Part 2 for those keeping score. And this is the trailer for Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, the upcoming film that features both, you guessed it, Batman and Superman.
What?
In some sort of justice that comes after the dawn or something. I don't begin to know what the title is going for with needless complications, but regardless, this trailer is something of a debacle for Warner Brothers. I mean, they were going to launch it tomorrow at this exclusive IMAX event, and they attempted to, you know, tease that out with this 20-second, like, look at the cow and look at the S plan of attack before someone decided to record it in very crappy quality, post it online, and have numerous parentheses respected unparentheses sites post it anyway. And Warner Brothers' solution was, well, I guess the cat's out of the bag, we might as well release the cleanest version possible, much like Marvel did when the Avengers trailer leaked last winter. And so here we have it. We have the full trailer for that movie. I'm just not saying the title anymore. And so yeah, with all of that in mind, with this new trailer for the film that features Ben Affleck, Henry Cavill, and a bunch of others in Zack Snyder world, which I know some of you are big fans of, what did you have to think about that? Let's go with Mark first, who I believe had Man of Steel as like his number one movie ever.
You know, I didn't know we were discussing this trailer, so I haven't even seen it. So, I mean, that might be a review right there, in a sense.
All right. Maxwell, what did you think of the trailer?
Eh, that's all I got.
Abe.
Yeah, after watching the Star Wars trailer and then having the debacle, like what you had mentioned, this one leak online, and also people were really happy about having the teaser of the teaser, and I saw the teaser of the teaser, and I was like, eh, it's okay. And then I saw the actual trailer, and I was like, it's okay. I mean, I'm not expecting, I guess maybe there's still some lingering aftertaste of Man of Steel there, and I don't know if that's giving me some sort of weaker than normal vibe to it, but for the most part, it's okay.
Yeah, I can't say like I was blown away by the trailer just because I wasn't blown away by the trailer. It's weird that I'm in a world where like we can get a Batman Superman movie, and I'm not as excited as I like to be, but that honestly is kind of on Zack Snyder and what Man of Steel did, more so with David S. Goyer as well, the screenwriter, who I am happy to throw under the bus any chance I can. But yeah, the trailer, the thing I'm not complaining about is what the tone looks to be. Like, it looks like it fits with what Man of Steel set up. Like, unfortunately, it seems kind of comically dark and gritty at this point. Like, that's how far down it goes. Like, it's not just, like, dark and gritty. It's just, like, it's the darkest, possibly grittiest movie you could, like, imagine, apparently, as far as Batman movies go. It just happens to have Superman along for the ride as well. It sets up some neat ideas as far as how to utilize Batman in this universe. It's just the look that I'm getting from it. It's great that it's, you know, it seems like it's different from other things that we've gotten in the past, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know how different I want to go. Like, how dark do we want to get with this thing? What do we, like, is there going to be fun in it at all? Like, and that's not what we're seeing so far. Well, yeah, it's like, no one's not going to see a Batman versus Superman movie.
Right.
Like, that's not going to happen. But it's, yeah, I mean, gotta wait for more. Got 11 months, so we got some time.
Wait for more.
What troubles me a little bit is that, obviously, the goal of whoever cuts the trailer is to sell your movie. And I'm just not sure why they felt the content of the trailer was, you know, the best way to introduce this new movie. And if it's, like, reflective of the overall piece, I'm pretty skeptical.
Mm. And
the one thing I have to say is, and although he's not shown a lot, I mean, so far I'm digging what Affleck seems to be bringing.
Yeah, I mean, he's not, you know, we don't see too much of what's happening, but, I mean, he's certainly there, and regardless of how silly this new Batman voice is, which is more of based on what he's wearing rather than
right.
what he's actually going to be doing, I do like that dialogue. I like, that's like a very Frank Miller line that he says, do you plead, you're going to, like, it's just, it's, and, like, even the setup of Batman, or, I'm sorry, of Superman, like, controversy surrounding the idea of a false god being present on Earth. Like, that's, there's some interesting stuff there. But then again, Man of Steel also presented an interesting idea. It just went about it in, you know, not the best of ways.
Question for you guys about this. Is this an older Bruce Wayne in this movie, or is
that's
this
the idea? And Ben
I
Affleck
think
is,
so, yeah.
Ben Affleck is, you know, mid-40s, so, I mean, it's right. like...
Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely the idea. I mean, it's certainly, like, it's not a direct adaptation of The Dark Knight Returns by Frank Miller, but it does, like, is drawing inspiration from that, and that, obviously, Bruce Wayne's even older in that. He's, like, pushing 70 in that book.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's certainly a kind of an aged Bruce Wayne Batman character that's being kind of brought back, or whatever you want to call it, into this
right.
universe. So, with all that said, we'll see. Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, arrives in theaters and IMAX, with featuring scene shot in IMAX on March 25th, 2016. So there you go. There's the host of other characters is supposed to be in this thing as well. Like, there's still Wonder Woman's and Aquaman's and all kinds of things happening.
And Lex Luthor's.
Yeah. So there's plenty of material for the valet guys on Key and Peele to mine for that one. moving on now. With all that out of the, I mean, there's more we could talk about. We had a new Fantastic Four trailer, an Ant-Man trailer.
There's a ton.
Terminator,
yeah.
which continues to uninterest me. and maybe the most exciting of them all, Joe Dirt 2, Beautiful Loser. But we can save that all for another time. I'm sure all three of those will definitely be on our top 10 box office wager, especially Joe Dirt 2 streaming on Crackle this summer. moving on, though. You say what's Crackle?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Crackle is one of the very streaming services available for everyone else.
It just basically plays commercials in between parts of the movie.
Anyway, let's move on. Let's get out of this and get into our main film review for Ex Machina.
This building isn't a house. It's a research facility. And I want to talk to you about what I'm researching. You want to see something cool?
Hello.
You are dead center of the greatest scientific event in the history of man.
Do you have a name?
Ava.
Answer me this. How do you feel about her?
Her AI is beyond doubt.
No, nothing analytical. Just, how do you feel?
I feel that she's amazing.
All right, that should have been some of the trailer for Ex Machina. This is the story of a programmer, played by Domhnall Gleeson, selected to test some experimental AI created by an isolated inventor and CEO of a giant tech company, played by Oscar Isaac. This test has Gleeson's character speaking with the AI, who has been built into an android, played by Alicia Vikander. With all that said, this sort of testing may prove to be trickier a situation than expected. Maxwell, I'd add, what has been your relationship with the previous works of Alex Garland, and what did you think of his directorial debut?
Okay, first of all, I just want to say that the M in Domhnall is silent, so his name is actually Donal Gleeson.
Don't care. I'm kidding.
Well, it's one of those strange, I don't know if it's Irish or Gaelic or whatever names that's hard to pronounce, kind of like Ralph Fiennes. In terms of Alex Garland, generally speaking, I have enjoyed his work. I don't love The Beach, but I do like 28 Days Later and Sunshine very much. I thought his script for Dread was very efficient. And I think this is a pretty brilliant debut. I love the film pretty much from top to bottom. I think it's a great chamber drama. It brings up fascinating scientific ideas and psychological ideas. The performances are fantastic. It kept me on the edge of my seat and left me with many questions to ponder. Not that I felt that the movie left things unanswered, but that it stimulated me intellectually in a way that I appreciated.
Mark Hoban.
I really enjoyed Ex Machina. I think the best parts about it are the script and the interactions between Ava, the android, and then the character by Donald Gleeson. Those interactions are really good. And then Donald Gleeson has to report back to Oscar Isaac his findings, which are being monitored. But it's almost like he wants to see like how he has interpreted his interactions. And that's interesting as well. I think Oscar Isaac is really, really great in this film. I mean, actually, there's three really good performances. The actress Alicia Vikander, who plays the robot of sorts, is extraordinary as well. I had never seen her before, so she was new to me. But Oscar Isaac is almost unrecognizable in this movie. I mean, he's got a shaved head and this bushy beard, and his character is so disconcerting. I mean, he sort of wants to present himself as this sort of laid back, hey, I'm just a bro, let's hang out and have a beer. But he's so not that guy. And as you watch the film and you sort of see his interactions with Donald Gleeson, he's really like, he's creepy. I mean, and I won't reveal like the narrative, because there's things that you find out throughout the course of the film that you realize this guy is really a weirdo. But I enjoyed like their interactions a lot. And then, of course, the interactions between the robot are also quite good. She's actually she took ballet. So her like placement of her arms and the way she interacts, I mean, she's supposed to be robotic, but at the same time, it's very graceful and it's very studied the way that she interacts and stuff. And it's all really good. So I love the look of the film and this sort of subterranean compound where Oscar Isaac lives and everything. I don't think that the film is particularly deep. And when the whole thing was over, I kind of thought, wow, there really isn't I didn't feel like there was a whole lot to it. But I was fascinated by the film and I did enjoy it. So I was really into it. But I don't think it was particularly deep. I think it does have – it's sort of like a Twilight Zone episode. It has some interesting concepts, but it wasn't any – I didn't learn anything new. But I think it was still a very – fascinating film, and I really enjoyed the look of it.
I thought this is a very, very good film. In terms of great, maybe not, but very, very good, very thought-provoking. And one of the things that I liked about it a lot is just the intrigue that characters build into the storyline. So that's kudos to Alex Garland for his writing. Everyone has given praise to Oscar Isaac, and he is great in this. He's like this alcoholic, workaholic that is really good at what he does and lives alone in the Fortress of Solitude out in, like, Iceland.
Norway.
But it's really interesting because I appreciated that it was a smart film, but not overly smart in terms of demeaning an audience. Just meaning, like, oh, they're going to explain this stuff. And don't worry, you won't get it because you're not that smart, or these guys are so smart that they don't have, or that they're just talking light years ahead of you.
Did you program her to flirt with me?
If I did, would that be cheating?
Wouldn't it?
Caleb, what's your type?
Of girl?
No, of salad dressing. Yeah, of girl. What's your type of girl? You know what? Don't even answer that. Let's say it's black chicks. Okay? That's your thing. For the sake of argument, that's your thing. Okay? Why is that your thing? Because you did a detailed analysis of all racial types and you cross-referenced that analysis with a points-based system? No. You're just attracted to black chicks. A consequence of accumulated external stimuli that you probably didn't even register as they registered with you.
Did you program her to like me or not?
I programmed her to be heterosexual, just like you were programmed to be heterosexual.
Nobody programmed me to be straight.
You decided to be straight? Please, of course you were programmed by nature or nurture or both. And to be honest, Caleb, you're starting to annoy me now because this is your insecurity talking. This is not your intellect.
They're smart, but they also are able to essentially help you understand what's going on, why they're doing these things. And also they help you, they basically reveal everything toward the end of the movie, which made things even more interesting because of how you perceive things previously in the film. So when something, when Oscar Isaac is giving his whole spiel, it made me rethink about how I view situations just in my own daily life of how I perceive things and what people might be saying versus what actually is said and whatever else. All in the name of science or all in the name of testing something, which was very interesting. One of the things I didn't like was Domhnall Gleeson's character, and that's only because I don't really get a sense of who he is, and you do learn these things about him throughout, but there's a line where Oscar Isaac basically tells him, like, hey, man, I chose you. You might not be the best, and quite honestly, you're probably not, but I just chose you just because. And that kind of bothered me because going into the movie, like three quarters of it, I was thinking, oh, well, this guy is like a genius coder too. Clearly not the case. So above all, though, I did like, what's her face?
Alicia Vikander.
Alicia Vikander. Very, very much. Like Mark talked about it in terms of her placement of her hands and her movement and whatever else. It's. I'm pretty sure that her dance practice comes into it, but also I'm glad that they did some work in terms of, you know, moving your head first, or how would an android react to a situation like this? How would they sit? How would they stand? And it's very, very heartwarming to some degree when she starts putting on makeup and basically showing herself as a full-fleshed human being during these sessions with Domhnall Gleeson. But on the whole, very, very interesting concept. It is a very good film. Just some caveats here and there that didn't really push it over the top.
I love this movie. It's currently, and I've seen some movies this year, this is currently my favorite film of the year so far, and I won't be surprised if it remains that way, at least on the top 10 list come the year end. I think it's terrific. It'd be a great stage play. It just happens to be a film that has some terrific special effects, which I don't think have been mentioned at all so far. But I think they're truly pretty amazing for a low budget or, you know, a lower budget film than, you know, some of the other stuff that we've seen. I think the acting from all three characters is pretty terrific. Obviously, Oscar Isaac makes the biggest impression because he's the way he plays his character is just the most offbeat. But I think Alicia Vikander, she does a terrific job playing this AI who has a way of presenting itself. And the way you kind of interpret what's going on there can be thought of in various ways. The same can be said for the other characters as well. And I actually do think Domhnall Gleeson does a terrific job here, and I do think I get a lot of what his character is. I disagree with you on that point, Abe. I think the film and, you know, the setup presents him in one way, but it's purposely doing other things as well to get you to understand what he really is. And Oscar Isaac's character very much understands that, and that's something I love about Oscar Isaac's character, yeah. where he plays a certain persona, but does have ulterior motives as well. And just the way all of these three characters enter, I mean, for being, you know, a very, very, very singular film in terms of, like, what we're, like, where we are, who we're seeing, we're following just a couple characters, just one location, it manages to do that, I think, in a really clever way throughout, without feeling too stagey and without feeling claustrophobic. This is a film that takes place in an underground bunker, yet we see some really great shots of the kind of the environments that they're living in, and never feels like I'm being encased too much. It feels like I'm getting to see a lot in a film that doesn't have too many places to go, which I found to be quite impressive. I mean, from a directorial standpoint, I think Alex Garland does a terrific job here. He also matches it with some really solid writing. I've had problems with Garland's work in the past, particularly in his third acts, where I think 28 Days Later and Sunshine, while I like those movies more now than maybe when I first saw them, I certainly think there's a downgrade in how those movies play in their final third as opposed to what's being set up in them. Here, I think he really managed, and I think he's done this with Never Let Me Go as well, his other film that he wrote.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's done a very good job of putting together a film that is just really competently made and structured throughout it. And I would say to Mark's point, where he... You don't believe you maybe walked away learning anything new. I can agree with you to a point, but I thought I had so many questions coming away with it that were like reflect the movie in a good way of just kind of what the overall motives may have been and who really was the quote unquote bad guy in this and who was the good guy. I mean, there's so many interpretations I could have of what actually happened at the end of this film, and I found all of it very fascinating.
Oh, sorry, I was just gonna say that as far as like question or the subject of artificial intelligence, I think, is a very deep subject, and I didn't really feel like it delved into that. So that's why I wasn't feel like it was that innovative.
Max, what did you want?
Yeah, I mean, just speaking to your point and you know, rebutting Mark's point to a point, I think it paints three complex psychological portraits of very different beings, and the fact that one of those complex psychological portraits is of an artificial intelligence-based character is very I don't usually like to use this word, but it's very deep. So, you know, to use the terminology you used, I thought the film was very insightful about the way different people might handle AI, what we hope to achieve from it, how we design it, what we might design it to do for us, and then how, if we make a truly sentient being, if we reach the singularity, as they call it, how that being would then go on, what choices he or she would make, and that sort of thing. So in that regard, I thought it was very interesting.
And that's one of the things I liked about the movie, too, is just the questions that it does raise. I love the ending of this movie a lot. I was very pleased with it because I'm a big fan of the concept of manipulation and whatever else that Oscar Isaac was trying to test for.
Be careful here.
Yeah, yeah. And how it plays out. And I loved the way that how that basically created came full circle. So on the whole, I thought that, again, there was something to take away just in terms of, well, if we did create something like this, would it be a bad thing? Would it be a good thing? Is it an evil? Is it a good? I mean, basically, it's just a living being. You really can't control it. You just give it the ability to decide, and it's kind of a nature versus nurture kind of thing, right?
What so, more is, like, it's not living. It's a thing, I mean, to phrase it in simplistic terms, but what I enjoy about Oscar Isaac's character is that the film, and you can get this from the trailer, it wants to present him as a villain of some sorts, or at least an antagonist. Mm-hmm. But, like, is he? I mean, because all he's doing is testing a machine. Like, he's basically testing a blender. Like, that's
you're talking about Oscar Isaac?
Yes.
So you question whether or not he's a villain?
I think there's a good argument to be made. I mean, beyond...
Same here.
Beyond seeing certain things that he does, I don't think he does anything that's necessarily kind of harmful to anything.
They're machines. I
mean, right.
He's
just
conducting experiments.
I guess villain is too strong, but whether he's an admirable person or someone that you'd want to like put up on a pedestal to admire, I would not. I think he's definitely he's a bit reprehensible, but I mean he's human.
I chalk it up more to his reclusive nature than like plans he has for the world.
Well, I mean, so just a little bit to I haven't really gone into the, but he has this basically servant girl that he employs. Her name is Kyoko, and he talks about how she doesn't speak or understand English, and in this way he can sort of freely talk trade secrets around her. His like sort of insulting disregard for her, I mean, is offensive. Like the way that he behaves around her, and I don't know. It's
but given what the movie,
I don't really agree with that, but I can't speak to why.
Given what the movie, but, I mean, I think
well, so if you reveal why, then yeah, it explains it more. But
does that still hold water though in your argument when you understand why? I mean, it's not.
You don't know that though. You know, like you don't, I don't know.
Right, but once the film is done, you've established a new context that then makes you go back and reevaluate what you've seen. And that's one of the many.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. There's more to it than
that. We're like towing the line here, I guess.
Yeah, I mean.
But to the greater point, what I'm saying is.
I'll talk about it with regards to Ava. But, he has decided to make Ava a woman, and he's made her very shapely and seductive. And even Donald Gleason even mentions, like, well, why make it a woman? Why is that important? And he's like, well, why not? You know, we are sexual beings. And so that component to his personality is reflected in his whole sort of worldview. And I don't think he's an admirable person. I mean, is he a villain? It's like I think I could find any number of Silicon Valley CEOs and they would be very similar to this. In fact, I think the character of that Oscar Isaac is playing is very real. And I think a lot of people who head these kind of corporations have these sort of godlike complexes. Are very ego driven, and you know they've got lots of money, and you know millions of people look up to them and put them on a pedestal. So he embodies all of that, and he is human. But I don't think that he's an admirable person.
So in terms of that, I do agree that he's not the most admirable, but I will say that he is very intelligent and he's very calculating. Because again, even at the end of the movie, he basically says, "Look, man, here's a pass. I was doing this to you all along. I knew what I was doing. I was being a dick to you basically throughout the entire movie. But it was to test something that I really, really thought is going to be a breakthrough." And so he's just really cold and calculating and manipulative, yes, but he's just that's just because of his genius, I think.
That speaks to an aspect of relating to like the main plot, but I understand what Mark's saying in terms of other things that we learn about.
Absolutely. About, I mean, in terms of like misogyny and whatever else, yes. Yeah, it's not great.
The thing too is he's such an odd character he is so human. Like I know people like this, but you know, he one minute he's partying hard, he's slamming down, you know, alcohol and all this. The next minute he's like, oh, I need to purge and I need to drink wheatgrass and exercise and work out. Like those two things don't go together. I mean,
but you say you know people like that. I do know people like that.
So that's not a trait that I admire in people. If I see somebody abusing drugs, and then I say, "Oh, now I need to work out and get fit." I don't admire that in people.
Does that make it a flaw of the film, though?
No, it's not. I'm discussing the character.
Okay, all right.
No, it has nothing to do with the flaw in the film.
All right.
No, you were saying that you like think this guy
I lost track of the question that we were asking.
I think the point
we
is
were
that
originally
you,
talking about whether this guy is a villain, and you were saying that he's not. Like, and almost.
I'm not saying he's not. I'm saying there's ways to think about it beyond simple terms, I guess. Besides morality and things that he does in terms of his character, I think in terms of what the movie's presenting, and if you wanted to apply certain labels to things, I wouldn't necessarily say he's the inherent bad guy of the film necessarily. I think there's ways to look at it that make it interesting.
I think Donald Gleason is definitely the good guy. I mean, he's the one that's the caring, sort of nurturing type person, and he's he wins this chance, you know, but anyway, he wins this chance to come to the thing, and he was it was fortuitous that he won because he has these qualities, and
supposedly
right. So you know, I think he's definitely more on the side of the good. And then, of course, there's this character of Ava,
I mean,
which is a robot.
You could say he's more on the side of good, but I do think there's probably people that have written articles about this that could support him being on a darker, not necessarily darker in terms of like he wants to commit evil, but in terms of what he's desires to unleash upon the world, regardless of what the
right,
to what's right and wrong.
I think the point here is that the film is smarter than just being able to put one character in the good box and one character in the bad box. I think all three of the main characters we've been discussing are implicit in making decisions that cause the ultimate fate of the film. And so saying, oh, he's the villain, he's the good guy, may not give the film enough credit because, as I said, everyone makes these decisions based on their own personalities and their own priorities that can be interpreted in various ways. And personally, those sort of moral ambiguities and those questions about who's right, who's wrong, why they did what they did is a strength of this particular piece.
Yeah, I would just say that he's more closer to the bad guy than Donald Gleason. I don't think it's that they're all equally. I don't think it's equal. I walked away from the film feeling like this guy was a creep. Oscar Isaac,
which is fair, and I even agree with you to a point. It's just more of it's among the questions I had leaving the film, along with just what happens at the end and what it means and things of that nature. Regardless,
I mean, we see his prototypes, you know, in the past, and he's done this. He's created robots. Ava is not the first. They're all female. They're all shapely. You know, he has this sort of like, I don't know. He's this is sort of his worldview.
And I'm not saying he's not a creep, but I'm just saying they're just machines. I mean, it's hard. I know it sounds
right. But I mean, you make a decision when you create a machine. You can make a, you know, you can make it a R2-D2 is a machine. You know.
In terms of what he's designing, that's one thing. But in terms of kind of should I really be morally conflicted about the idea that he'd kill one of these machines, I don't know as such. And so having another character challenging him on that point, that's what doesn't make me look at him as necessarily the bad guy in this scenario if he's going to threaten the life of a machine, of a non-living, you know, being.
Right. I don't think that aspect makes him evil.
That's more what I'm speaking to, I guess, but all kinds of talk. That said, moving beyond that, something that I really enjoy about this movie is that it's very entertaining. I think it's really like a wicked comedy. Like there's a lot of really entertaining aspects to it in terms of the dialogue, how mainly Donald Gleason and Oscar Isaac interact with each other, how it easily could have Oscar Isaac, who's a terrific actor. He could have easily played it as the stuffy mad scientist who is very more like Nosferatu than the bro that he plays in this movie. But he is, and it's fun, and you get. I mean, he's totally a bro.
Yeah,
who happens to be a talented dancer. Apparently,
he's such a tremendous actor. I'm so excited to see how his career is going to evolve because I feel like we're just seeing like the beginning of what he's going to be capable of. Yeah. It's exciting.
He's been in many great films. I mean, he was like in The Devil's Double, Drive, and so many other good films. Lewin Davis. So
yeah,
a most violent year.
Most violent. Yeah. The thing I wanted to also bring up
Star Wars.
And Star Wars coming up.
Freaking Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. I'm not sure. But one of the things that you guys have all talked about, and I just want to bring up into light is that this film has just basically three central characters all in one bunker, and it captivated me for the entire film. And that is a great job. Well done to Alex, and again, the way that he has written the film and the way that he's directed it. Because the only other people that you see are a helicopter pilot, and then just nobody talking, but you just see some coworkers congratulating
Gleason. Set up before you get to where you're going to be for the rest.
And then it's just the three characters, and that was I was captivated. Especially when it writes on the screen, like Ava, session one or two. It was very, very well done.
It's structured well. Like, I enjoyed how it kind of went about piecing itself together in terms of the Turing test that it's utilizing to have Donald Gleason's character test Ava. I keep saying Donald Gleason's character. What's his name in the movie?
good question.
Caleb.
Caleb. And what, Nathaniel or Nathan?
Nathan.
Nathan and Caleb, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just the way it's structured around those two are going to test over a certain number of days, and just how that all plays into it. Like, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's not.
It was just over a week. Yeah, that this happened. Yeah, okay.
And the film is what, like 100 minutes maybe without credits. Like, it's not like long. It doesn't overstay its welcome. And I do think it's just it's smart without feeling smart. Like, it's smart without making you think that you need to like make sure that you're aware of certain things beforehand, or else you won't get it. Like, it Abe, you've said it earlier when you're initially talking about it. It does a good way of kind of presenting information without making it feel like it's presenting you with information.
The one of the other aspects I really liked, and I think this went a long way towards keeping the momentum, is the score. I didn't really recognize the composers' names. I'm not that familiar with their work. They seem to be new. And it just really helps keep things moving along, keeps the tone on edge. So really well done there. And the cinematography also. Aaron, you mentioned sort of some of the exterior shots that are really just beautiful and set the scene really well and help establish the juxtaposition between nature's beauty outside and then sort of the like almost industrial quality of Nathan's bunker.
And one of the other things I liked about it too is just it kept me guessing as to where the story was going to go and how it was going to evolve, because I was thinking, oh, well, maybe one character is an android too, and he's just super advanced, and now we've got to test to see if androids can speak with other androids. And then I was like, well, maybe the creator is an android, and he died a long time ago, and, and you know, this is just like himself being – that's why he has to live in this bunker by himself. But it kept me guessing toward the end, and I was very, very pleased.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on Ex Machina before we move on?
Great sound effects from when she's turning her head and stuff like that too.
I think, I mean, from a technical level, I do. There's a lot. We're at a point where visual effects are amazing pretty much any time you get a movie with visual effects, save for certain ones. But, I mean, for the most part, you don't generally see many weaknesses in that area. So for a movie like this, which, you know, it relies on one character being an android, you know, basically, you know, removing parts of the body to make it appear as if it has hollow machine parts or what have you. Like, I was really impressed. Like, it's really seamless. Like, I don't look for the seams, but at the same time, it's like, it was solid to look at this thing and not, like, have to think about it. It's like, no, it just looks like a robot.
Right. I think the most successful kinds of science fiction films with the special effects are ones that don't attempt to do the impossible, but stay within the realm of what is available and then do that really well. Because this movie doesn't, even though the special effects are really good, they're nothing. I mean, it's nothing like...
Yeah, it's not groundbreaking. Yeah.
It's not groundbreaking, but what for what it does is really good. And I think that's always better than these films that try to push the boundaries of what special effects can do and then come off looking, you know, some of these CGI disasters. It starts to get like, this is just not even like an actual film anymore. It's more like a cartoon. And this film is very, you know, it did it all very well. And it really isn't even about special effects. It's about this dialogue between these sessions that Caleb and Ava have. And then when and these interactions between Caleb and what's Oscar Isaac's name?
Nathan.
Caleb and Nathan. Those interactions are kind of the focus, and that is what really, you know, those conversations were really, you know, wonderful. That's what I loved about the film.
It'd be a cool play. I'd be interested to see it as a play. Guess who's computing at dinner? It'd be wonderful. So with all that in mind, Ex Machina is in some theaters now. It's expanding wider next week, I believe. And let's start with Maxwell. When would you say people should go see this movie?
As soon as possible in theaters. Gets one of my highest recommendations.
Abe?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say go check it out in theaters.
Mark?
Same thing. Go see it in theaters.
For sure. I agree. Original sci-fi. Cool. Good job, Alex Garland. I look for, and good job, you know, two cast members from Star Wars Hole and The Force Awakens, and Alicia Vikander, who I think has a good career ahead of her if she keeps choosing projects like this.
Definitely. Right. She looks a lot like Emilia Clarke, by the way.
I can see that, yeah.
Who is Emilia Clarke?
She is Daenerys on Game of Thrones.
Khaleesi.
Okay.
Yeah.
She has dragons. No big deal. moving on, let's get to our sponsor this week. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. There are over 150,000 titles for you to choose from. for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player, or personal robot that comes with an MP3 player, any of those things. There is plenty of books that I can recommend. You can go for do Android Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick, which of course inspired Blade Runner. That's on there. There's many other ones from like Isaac Asimov or whatnot that fit the theme of this week's episode involving Ex Machina and AI and what have you. But regardless, it's all up there on audibletrial.com/podcast. You can download a book for free. You can try out their service for a month. If you don't like it, you can get rid of the service, but you get to keep the book that you downloaded for free. So be a winner.
Read
or listen. audibletrial.com/podcast. All right. That's out of the way. Let's move on now. Let's get to our feedback.
Feedback.
This is, of course, where we go over the various questions and answers that we received on our Facebook page, facebook.com/podcast, where we asked you guys a number of questions, and you, the listeners, responded, and you also asked us questions, which we will now answer on the show. So, Abe, why don't you start us off?
Sure, yeah. First question we asked everyone is, what is your favorite movie set entirely in one location? Philip writes Rear Window and Moon, both good choices. Yeah. Heather writes Phone Booth, another good choice with, is he Irish or is he Scottish?
Who, Colin Farrell?
Yeah, Colin Farrell.
Irish,
yeah. Jim Dietz, friend of the show, has Das Boot, 12 Angry Men, 90% of Reservoir Dogs, and Alien, and The Shining, or The Shinin.
Backing up to Moon, I love Moon.
We
both love Moon, yeah. And like that's when I watched Ex Machina, I was trying to think of other sci-fi films, but ones like with that much simplicity to it, I would say like Ex Machina is my favorite sci-fi film of that nature since Moon.
Oh, that's high regard. Moving right along, Manish writes Rope, 12 Angry Men, as mentioned above. Amber writes Locke.
That's a good point.
Tom Hardy, yeah. Mike writes The Descent. Shalem has The Breakfast Club all day.
I didn't even think of The Breakfast Club for this. Mainly because I'm not.
It's all in their school. I didn't even think about it.
I'm not a big John Hughes guy, but like that's.
I love The Breakfast Club.
Andreas writes Star Wars prequels.
That's funny because it's
ha ha green
screen. Matt writes Cube. Tammy writes The Breakfast Club, and lastly, Rob writes Rope.
Rope is good.
Next up, we have favorite random dance or musical.
Can I add one?
No, go, Mark. I'm sorry.
Well, those are some really great ones. Also, The Night of the Living Dead.
There you go.
Oh yeah,
it's great. It's a good answer. Next up. No one said Saw, by the way. I'm not a huge fan of Saw, so I don't care.
No one said it, but I hate it.
I don't really consider that in one location, though.
I guess not. I guess it's more of the core premise. It's like, what if
I mean, a lot of it takes place, but with all the flashbacks and the other stuff, I wouldn't say it does.
Very true, yeah. Next up, we have favorite random dance or musical number in a non-musical film. Jim has Malcolm McDowell. Singing in the Rain in A Clockwork Orange, The Dude's Dream in The Big Lebowski, The Circle Jerks as the lounge band in Repo Man. That's an obscure reference that I enjoy quite a bit. Putting on the Ritz from Young Frankenstein. Tyler has When Austin Powers Destroys the Fembots to I Touch Myself Always Makes Me Laugh Uncontrollably. Philip has Brad Pitt's Daughter Singing the Show from Moneyball. Kara has Ducky in Pretty in Pink. April has Reservoir Dogs Stuck in the Middle of You. It's a nice pick. Joe has Spider-Man 3, gets a reaction out of me every time, usually a terrible case of the dry heaves. Michael Lee has Hugh Grant in Love Actually. That's wonderful.
That is wonderful.
pretty much everything Hugh Grant does in Love Actually is pretty wonderful.
Yeah. But, ooh, would we call her chubby? Sorry.
That lot, yes.
Sorry.
Let's just talk about Love Actually. Justin has Top Gun or Beetlejuice. Mike has Let's Get It Started from Hot Tub Time Machine. Brandon Peters has Skeleton Twins. Nice. He had an exclamation point, so I said it that way. Karen has Napoleon Dynamite. Rob has You'll Be a Woman Soon from Pulp Fiction. Jason has Iron Man 2. I think he's referring to like the brief scene where Sam Rockwell dances on stage. Which, yeah, good for him. Max, well, you're on the show. You have a bond of the dance scene in Clerks 2 as well as the dance in 500 Days of Summer.
Plus, oh, yes. Plus, thank you. Yes. That's the one I was waiting for, 500 Days of Summer.
I
love
forgot
it.
Someone put it, so awesome. I'm waiting to read it. Plus, who can forget putting on the Ritz in Young Frankenstein? And lastly, David has My Sharona at the convenience store.
My Sharona. Right.
A lot of good answers there, guys.
A lot.
Yeah, really good answers.
Next question we ask everyone is your favorite mad scientist. Jason writes Dr. Horrible, as in PhD in horribleness. J-Man writes, Steve Jobs. Shaylin writes, easy, large professor. Manish writes, Dr. Frankenstein. Frankenstein, also Dr. Frankenfurter. Kara writes, Gary and Wyatt.
From Weird Science.
Gary writes, Gene Wilder, Young Frankenstein. Justin writes, Doc Brown, hands down. Adam writes, Dr. Strangelove.
Yes.
David writes, Frankenfurter. Lastly, Mike Jones writes, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
He put up a picture, and I thought it looked like it was from Mystery Science Theater 3000. I wasn't exactly sure.
All three of your questions this week had John Hughes-related responses.
True. Yeah, you're right. So we'll never do that again. Okay. We'll just strike those from the questions.
Oh, stop it.
All right, so now we have some questions that you guys asked us that we can answer. Now, Philip has a really good question that I like right now, just especially because of this panel of people that I have on with us. What was the main thing that moved you from being just a regular movie fan to a cinephile?
I'd say that I'm not really a cinephile in terms of knowing as much as these three talented folks on the podcast with me, Aaron, Maxwell, and Mark. They know much more in terms of all the cinema films. But more current things. You guys know stuff like the 40s films and the 1920s films. It's very
decades
amazing.
Previously unheard of by
just know. Well, honestly, just to like listen to this and know that you or listen to what you guys have to say about it, is like I'm still astonished. So I don't even know if I'm a cinephile. I'm just a movie fan listening to people talk.
Abe, you host a podcast with me. You're a cinephile. as far as things that move me, that's a tricky question because I've had a love for film for a long time. But like the word cinephile, if I had to like pinpoint a time, I'd probably say the year of 1999, when just a lot of films that I currently hold up as some of my favorites ever were all coming out, and I had lots more things to ask myself about film and the nature of it and what I like about it, and asking myself questions and going back on other films that I already had an appreciation for. Obviously, and Maxwell and Abe, we're all around the same age, Mark. I know you're a little older than us.
Oh, gee, thanks.
So I didn't say you're ancient, but I'm just like speaking respectively from like saying the year 1999. I mean, it's like it's not too far long ago, but I mean that's certainly kind of when I would say things started happening in terms of.
Yes, I was watching movies in the 80s.
When? You guys have thoughts on this?
Well, just when I was young, my parents used to take me to the library, and they had this wall of VHS tapes, and it was lots of basically older films. They didn't have the most recent things, and they used to have like, you know, Gone with the Wind and Wizard of Oz, as well as like all of Hitchcock's like greatest works. And it had One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and The Godfather. So I would like regularly check out these VHS. These were VHS tapes, not DVDs. VHS tapes. And I would take them home and I'd watch them like regularly. And just over the course of, you know, weeks and weeks, I developed this like, you know, really love for like old films. I mean, and then, of course, you know, it's continued on to recent things as well. But, you know, when the library gets the movies, they tend to be the really good stuff. They didn't get, you know, like whatever, like the forgotten movies of the 80s. It was always like movies that won Academy Awards and things like that. So, you know, I got to see like some of the greatest films during that time. And then it just sort of like that, you know, at an impressionable age, it sort of like sticks with you. So that's kind of how I came into it.
Excellent.
Yeah, I always love the movies. Like, you could pretty much find me at the cinema every Friday night, and I would rent VHS tapes from Blockbuster all the time. But it was when I finally saw Paul Thomas Anderson's Magnolia on DVD.
That was the year of 1999.
Yeah, I think I saw it the next year after it came out at home, where I would say the word cinephile starts to apply. That's sort of when I like opened up my eyes. I had like an epiphany to film is not just something you do like to have fun, but it's like the premier art form and something I want to, if not devote my life to, spend a considerable amount of time studying, went to film school, etc. So
It's neat because, like, I've always been good at names. Like, that's why it's, like, hard to pinpoint a cinephile. Like, I've always, like, not just actors, but, like, directors and writers and things. Like, it's always something that it's, like, from a younger age. It's like, I'd be...
Yeah, I always used to, like, to stay and watch the credits, and all my friends are like, let's go, it's time to go, and I'd be like, but I want to see who the best boy Grip was.
Where did they film this? I don't have an IMDb.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a book, too, that I was, like, really into. It was called The Film Encyclopedia by Ephraim Katz. And that book, I got it from the library. It used to have, like, all the different movies. This is obviously before the internet. All the films that, you know, a star would do. So before the IMDb, you know, there were books that would show, like – and I would love to, like, look at, you know, a particular star and see, like, all the films that they had ever done. And this book, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this book. It's kind of famous, but I don't think they update it anymore because the author is no longer living. But it had like a little bit of a biography of each of these stars and things like that. And, you know, it would show like what their debut film was. So you could see like, oh, who starred in what and what was their first film. So that also kind of like added to my like study of film.
Cool.
The accessibility of films and the knowledge base on the internet has made it so easy to be a cinephile now that I almost am jealous of like the ease at which, you know, young kids who are now discovering their love from film can feed it. Like when, right. You know, growing up in the 90s or the 80s for you, Mark, you know, when the internet was not around or just in its infancy, you really had to like go out of your way to discover this information and really learn.
Well, Maxwell, so. that's why you can always say that you're better than them.
No, all I'm saying is that if you
he's not saying better; he's saying just easier.
Yeah, if you
can
have
call it what you want.
If you have an interest in film, feed it, guys. I mean, there's so much out there, so much to learn, so much to watch on Netflix and Amazon. Don't just watch new stuff; like explore the depths of cinema for the past 120 years now.
Maxwell, that's all fun and games, but how are we going to see Paul Blart 2 if we're busy watching old movies?
Yeah,
gosh.
Come on, let me tweet my stuff. Hold on. But on the topic of learning and the age of information, there's a lot of people these days that are putting on cuts on the internet, like on YouTube, that kind of slice and dice how films are made and kind of some direction and whatever else, kind of just, film study in general, which is very interesting. So if you're into that, check out some YouTube videos and become a cinephile like these guys here.
And you too.
Somewhat.
What's the next question, Abe?
Next question we have from Jason is, who would you like to see direct a Hobbs movie starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson? And my answer to that is the woman who directed American Psycho, because I want to see Hobbs in his 1,000 crutches every morning while pulling a face peel off his face.
I'd say John McTiernan.
That would be good too. Probably better.
Get Predator or Die Hard director in here. Make a Hobbs movie. Maxwell, your thoughts on this?
It's an interesting question. Maybe Pete Berg.
Oh, there you go.
Oh,
they can make it pretty fun. You know, they've worked together before, so they would. That would be.
If they're not going to give us a rundown sequel, we might as well get a Hobbs
exactly.
movie.
Exactly.
Mark, I know you were a big fan of Furious 7, were you not?
I loved it.
Who would you like to see direct a Dwayne The Rock Johnson Hobbs character movie?
That's an interesting question.
Just focused on the big hulking rock character with his goatee and his sweat. And his big gun. The three things that define
I don't know. Like, I mean, whoever directed like Jason Statham in Crank, that I would
Double Dean Taylor. Nice.
That's a good choice.
Tyler asks, how do I become friend of the show, Tyler Wanky?
Well, Tyler, I guess we'll just start saying it. Friend of the show, Tyler
Wanky. Oh, boy.
Oh, we're holding?
I mean, I'd say he has to jump through a few hoops before he just becomes a friend of the show.
Okay.
I mean, he'd have
We don't really have a process down, but, you know, when we feel as though it's appropriate.
Am I a friend of the show?
Of course you are.
Yes.
You're on the show.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I don't know how this works.
And, you know, Kyle Chandler's a friend of the show because he's always welcome to be on the show.
Yeah.
There, There are people that are friend of the show that have never even been on the show.
Yeah, but the door is always open for them. That's how they are friend of the show. Like, if Sam Rockwell stopped by, of course he'd be a welcome.
Yeah, friend. He'd be a friend of the show.
Kyle Chandler, then, if you want to come on the show and discuss season one of Bloodline, please. help out my pals Aaron and Abe.
But say, you know, if Julia Roberts walked by, like, no, you're not a friend of the show. Yeah. She could stand here, but, like, she wouldn't be able to, like, be on the show. That'd be ridiculous.
And original friend of the show, Will Fichtner, so.
Yeah, but Will Fichtner, like, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that guy is, like, yeah, we love that guy.
Who doesn't love that guy?
Are we moving on to the next question?
Yes.
Next question from George is, who do you have winning the NBA Finals this year, or what director would make a great sports coach?
I know nothing about this, so I'm going to defer to Abe on that one.
So I'll say somebody, but I don't want to jinx it, but I definitely want the Warriors to win. And in terms of being a great sports coach, again, I've been watching Louis, and David Lynch made a cameo when Louis trying to get the Letterman job.
God, yeah, that
and perfect. He was great.
You guys, run over that way.
Say we'll go. We'll be right back. You got to work on your timing. Comedy is about timing.
Put up the D. Shoot the J. Let's just do David Lynch voice all the day. That's a good pick. I can't even defute. I have no.
Plus, his hair is amazing.
Yeah. Let's see. Justin asks a question that I think I've already answered. Did you get a chance to catch the Star Wars Celebration panel? Yeah, a little bit. He says, I loved it and was amazed that BB-8 was real. I have to say, J.J. Abrams seems to be doing right with all the practical effects. Well, thanks. we'll pass the note along to J.J. Or Jimmy Jams, as I call him.
Jimmy Jams?
Jimmy Jams Abrams, yeah.
So, makes perfect sense.
It's a family name. Moving on. that was feedback.
Feedback.
Now we have so much more to do. Now it's time for that what? Other thing.
Game. Oh, Aaron, is it time for some games? Wow. I mean, that's almost as if somebody else was playing it. Artificial intelligence. Just kept going and going and going.
I'm sorry. Going, you're right.
That made me laugh quite a bit.
I wanted to go as long as possible.
That was what made me laugh, is that it kept going.
It's like, oh. Yeah, it's usually pretty short.
Yeah.
This week. It's a packed show, I told you.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay, guys. Get your fingers on the buzzer.
Okay.
Because this game is called... this is my attempt to combine the words podcast and touring. This is the purring test. Ooh. Or man or machine. So basically I have a number of movies here and I have quotes from each of them. Each of these movies feature both humans and machine, robot, android, etc. characters. I'm going to read a quote from the said movie and you're going to tell me if you believe it was from a man or woman character or a robotic or android character.
Okay.
So basically you just buzz in.
Name the movie?
Yeah, I'll name the movie, yeah.
Okay.
So great. But basically you buzz in. You say, like, Abe, and then you answer man or machine.
Gotcha.
This is not to be confused with the other game, man or Muppet. here we go. Here's the first one. This is a quote from The Matrix Reloaded.
Okay.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
Abe.
Yeah.
Machine.
That is correct. The Merovingian says that quote. Good job, Abe.
Thanks.
Here's the next one. This one's from Terminator 2. Judgment Day. I'm sure it feels very real to you.
Abe.
Yes.
Man.
Man is correct. That is Dr. Silberman.
Yeah. Because the next line has an expletive in it.
Here comes the next one. This is from a future classic, Eagle Eye.
Oh.
The quote here is, Operation Guillotine is in effect.
Maxwell.
Yes.
Machine.
That is correct. The robotic disembodied voice, I believe it was Carrie Ann Moss was the voice, or was it Julianne Moore? I forget and don't care that much.
I've never seen that movie.
Write in. podcast@gmail.com if you know the voice of ARIA from Eagle Eye.
If you want to be a friend of the show, Tyler, you better write in.
This is your chance, Tyler, to prove yourself. This is it right here. If Tyler emails us, if he Googles Eagle Eye, looks up the voice of ARIA, and tells us who it was. No one else do this. I don't. If you
only
can,
Tyler.
You can throw it in, but I'm not going to read it. I'll just delete the email. If Tyler does it, he'll be a friend of the show. Here we go. Here's the next one. Mark, you're there, right?
I'm still here.
Okay. He's waiting. He's biding his time. He's
gonna... I mean, it's a 50-50 chance, so it's like...
Or is it? This one's from Transcendence, future classic. Abe's favorite movie of last year.
No, it's not.
Good enough for the monkey.
Hmm.
That's a real head scratcher.
Yeah.
Mark, man.
Incorrect. Said by Johnny Depp's character, although he was in whatever the hell he was supposed to be at that
point. Well, he was a man at first.
He was, but not so long. Here's the next one. This one's from Chappie. It's time to pump up the jam.
Seems like a trick question.
Could be.
I have not seen Chappie.
Chappie.
Mark Machine.
Incorrect.
That wasn't a trick.
Yeah. It was from Ninja, one of the members of The Antwerp that co-stars in Chappie.
Because I thought Chappie would have said it. Chappie.
Here's the next one from iRobot. Wrong number, ma'am.
Maxwell, man.
Yeah. Incorrect.
Ah.
It was a machine from one of the NS5 robots.
Oh, boy.
NS5.
Lots of Shia LaBeouf movies today.
Apparently, yeah. Because I'm not done with them either. There's another one. Here's the next one. This one's from The Matrix. You're cuter than I thought. I can see why she likes you.
Abe, man.
Incorrect.
Really? It's not the Oracle?
The Oracle is not a man. It is a machine.
Yes, it is.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
No, you didn't.
No, wow, that's a good point. Touche. That's
a good question.
Wow.
That was a good, fun question. Yeah. Here's the next one. No. It's Transformers.
Wait, what?
Is that the quote?
Yeah, is that the quote?
No, it's not the quote.
Oh, okay.
I was introducing the fact that it was Transformers.
I was going to bust it so fast and say, Shia LaBeouf.
Here it is. Are we talking about an invasion?
I want to say Abe, man.
Correct.
I want to say it's one of the soldiers.
It's one of the soldiers.
Okay. Is it Tyrese?
No, it's not Tyrese.
Okay.
Although I was looking at the quotes from Transformers, which I hadn't watched in a while and hadn't really thought about. And I saw, bring the rain!
Bring the rain! Yes!
Darn, that's like the treasure.
Tyrese. Woo! That's Tyrese right there. Okay, here's the next one. This one's from Big Hero 6. We jumped out a window.
Oh, Maxwell, machine.
That is correct. Baymax.
I know that. Like the back of my hand.
Are you satisfied with your care?
Ba la la la.
Here's the next one. From Prometheus. How far would you go to get your answers?
Maxwell, man.
Incorrect.
Ah! Was it David who said that?
Maxwell, you were correct. Michael Fassbender did in fact say that. So yeah, you were wrong on guessing. Yes. Here's the next one from AI, artificial intelligence. Are you in trouble? Have you run away from someone?
I have never seen that movie.
Maxwell Machine.
Correct. From Gigolo Joe, played by Gigolo.
I love Gigolo Joe. What a great character.
I agree. I really like. I was happy to see him get so much love in that movie. He got like a Golden Globe nomination, I think. Last one. This one's from Blade Runner. Quite an experience to live in fear, isn't it?
I want to say Abe, machine.
Correct.
Is it, what's his face?
Batty. Yeah, Rutger Hauer.
Rutger Hauer, yeah. Seems like it. All right, great.
Abe, you won that game.
Yes! That's like the first game I've won in like 3 months.
You got a lot of incorrects. If I wanted to score this differently, it could take off points for all the times you missed an answer to. But, you know, I'm not going to do that.
Oh, thanks.
you lucked out.
What a pal.
I think he still would have won, though.
Probably, yeah. All right, here we go. Let's go on to – that was games. Let's move on to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies coming out on Blu-ray, DVD, or streaming this week, and we have an assortment, that's for sure. First up, we have Taken 3, The Takening.
From what you guys said, it wasn't really worth it.
It's the worst movie I've seen this year.
Okay.
Tied with two other movies.
It's the worst movie I haven't seen this year.
There you go. Next up, we have Everly. This was the film with Salma Hayek. I believe it all takes place in one location, actually. It's like an action movie. Did not get a chance to see it. So that happened. Next up is A Girl Walks Home at Night. I believe, Mark, you saw this film, right?
Yeah, I did. It was very interesting.
It's like an Iranian vampire film, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, and very, very low budget, mysterious. No, very well done. You never saw it?
No, I look forward to checking it out.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing it also. Cool.
Next up, we have Cake, the Jennifer Aniston drama that racked up some Oscar buzz but never led to anything.
She's pretty good in it, but the film is not that good.
I actually liked it. I thought it was quite good.
It's worth seeing for her performance.
I liked what's her name? Adriana. I can't think of her last name. The actress.
She was in
Babel.
Babel also.
She got nominated for Babel.
La something. I can't think of it. Sorry.
And let's see. Next up, we have The Musketeer season 2. I know that's a popular BBC series that's going on.
Oh. Mm.
I've heard good things about it. I still haven't got a chance to see it, but
who has the time, Aaron?
Who has the time? then we have Escape from New York, Collector's Edition from Scream Factory.
I will be buying that.
Certainly a cult classic. Certainly number one on Jim Dietz's list of things to get immediately once they happen because it is his favorite movie. It's based on the review by Brandon Peters over at Why So Blue. It it's packed with new stuff and probably looks better than ever on Blu-ray. So good
job.
And lastly, I just want to mention this because I saw it's making its Blu-ray debut. A little-known classic called Biodome, featuring Pauly Shore and and of course William Atherton.
It's on Blu-ray
for the first time. Yes.
Oh jeez.
I'm more of an Encino Man person myself when it comes to
the
oeuvre of Mr. Shore.
The one where what's it called? Jury Duty or something?
Jury Duty. I'll take that over In the Army Now, but I believe Son-in-Law still kind of wins out most of those ones.
There are classic movies that haven't even been released on DVD yet, and this one's getting a Blu-ray.
People love their Pauly Shore.
I hope it has a new 4K scan and film Criterion Essays inside the box too.
Right.
They went back to the original master.
Yeah.
Spent a year and a half fixing the broken elements. They got the director to record two commentaries.
Oh, they got special commentary by Kylie Minogue.
Oh, seriously? Oh my god.
She was in that movie.
Yeah, she is.
Well, now
if you know who that is, but
I love Kylie Minogue. Now I have to buy that Blu-ray.
She's a delight.
She is pretty great.
So that's star of a Street Fighter and Holy Motors. Right. Those are two films that should be
Street
mentioned.
Street Fighter.
And don't forget
pop star?
what's the one? Moulin Rouge.
Yes.
She was that little green fairy.
She had a very memorable guest star turn on Doctor Who as well.
Doctor Who?
Yes.
Thanks for that. Moving on. Extremely Cool. These are movies that are currently streaming on Netflix that I want to just recommend because why not? Someone asked us if we could recommend more things that are currently on Netflix or just streaming. Abe, do you have anything by chance that you want to go through?
Spectacular Now is streaming.
It is.
So check that out.
Yeah. I'd also say recently They Came Together is now streaming. This is the David Wayne film starring Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler that came out last year, and I think it's hilarious. It's a kind of a send-up of New York rom-coms. And The Babadook is now streaming on Netflix.
Is it? Oh. Ugh.
And Abe certainly needs to watch that immediately. I know.
Babadook!
Oh, my God. That was really scary. That was
pretty good.
Scared now.
That was pretty good.
I'm going to have to watch it during daylight.
Aaron, did you get your book yet?
Yeah, not the book yet, no. I got the Blu-ray last week, but not yet with the book. I can't wait, though.
I would also add, if you haven't seen it or you're interested, season 1 of Halt and Catch Fire is now on Netflix.
Yeah.
Interesting AMC show about sort of the dawn of computers and whatnot.
It has a lot of good stuff in it, including Scoot McNairy and
Lee Pace. Yeah, I'll watch season 2. I think it was finding itself along the way.
That's a good way to put it.
Nice.
Also, Daredevil is now currently streaming online, and since we the new season of the first season of Marvel's Daredevil, which if you haven't started watching already, it's certainly worth checking out.
Yes.
And, after you, of course, listen to our commentary for the original film. That's what you obviously must do first.
Order of operations. You learn that in math.
There you go. So that's extremely cool. Next week, I believe Maxwell and Mark Hoban, among others, if it all works out, will be joining us again to talk the fourth annual Summer Movie Gamble.
Oh, boy.
This is, of course, where we make our predictions of what we believe will be the top 10 films at the box office of the summer from a domestic standpoint. There are certainly some that will rise to the top quicker than others, but the joy really is the nitty-gritty of what that, you know, kind of 7, 8, 9 slots are going to be, among others.
This is the show where I make my comeback.
Yes. Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see.
Last year, yeah, Maxwell basically won, even though Jordan kind of won in a landslide, but was just not present to like accept the prize.
So we had to give him a penalty.
But there was a lot of things. I mean, last year that was a fun year in terms of trying to predict.
It was intense.
There was a lot of.
I have flashbacks to that.
Yeah. Certain people aren't allowed on the podcast anymore. It's crazy. That's not true, that last part. But still, it's a lot of fun.
You know what I like about it, too, is because it forces you to really decide, like, okay, is Maleficent going to be a big hit? Or is, you know, How to Train Your Dragon going to be a big hit? And then at the end of the summer, you can't go back and say, oh, I knew that Maleficent was going to be a huge hit. It's like, no, you didn't. We were surprised by that, you know, because...
Except
you. We were all surprised.
We
were all surprised, though, that How to Train Your Dragon was not the huge hit that we expected it to be.
It was not the huge hit and Oscar winner that it should have been. You're correct on that front.
Yes.
Anyway, that's going to be next week's show. Should be a lot of fun. Should have, obviously, you guys. Hopefully, we'll be on there. We might get some returning champ, actually, come to think of it. And we might get some new blood on there as well. So we'll see. But that's that. What should people see now in theaters, and what do you plan to see next is the last thing we're going to do here. Maxwell, what would you say people should see in theaters right now?
Oh, I have no answer.
You've seen things recently.
Yeah, well, the one we talked about today is the one I would first recommend.
Okay.
Ex Machina. Or if it's playing near you, True Story.
Hmm. Mark Hoven.
I would recommend Ex Machina if it's playing near you. If not, Furious 7, if you haven't seen it yet. It's great.
Everyone has seen Furious 7.
See it again?
Yeah, I definitely recommend Ex Machina as well. In terms of what I'm going to see next, I might try and catch a Babadook, maybe even tonight.
Oh, boy.
Definitely watch it tonight. Then watch
Don't Veep. Sleep.
No, watch Veep. Watch Veep afterwards. You'll feel better.
Oh, okay. Yeah, great idea.
I would say, yeah, see Furious 7 if you haven't done that already. See While We're Young, because I really like While We're Young.
Oh, and I plan on seeing It Follows next.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
I have not seen it yet, no.
Good stuff.
Okay, yeah.
The Newport Beach Film Festival begins next weekend, actually, so I'll be seeing lots and lots of things in the coming week, so that should be something. I think that's going to do it, guys, for this week's episode here. It's been talked about a lot of things, but yeah, that's it. You can find more of my work at my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. You can find on my written movie reviews, as well as at ranthollywood.com, where I report on various movie items and write reviews there, and wisetheblue.com for Blu-ray reviews. You can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/aaronsps4. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blackbutt.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose, #RantHollywoodAaron.
Okay. Maxwell.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Cinemaxwell. Visit my site, cinemaxwell.com, and check out my podcast, Real Topics, which you can find at cinemaxwell.com or on iTunes.
Mark Hoven.
You can find my musings on the latest films at fastfilmreviews.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter, Mark_Hoven.
You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes and at Stitcher, as well as at hhwlod.com. That is the podcast network that hosts our show, along with other fun shows, including the Walking Dead TV podcast, Legion of Dudes, other fun shows about comics and games and cool stuff like that.
Listen to us over at outnow.podomatic.com, as well as soundcloud.com/outnowpodcast.
Send us your thoughts on Ex Machina or your top 10 picks for the summer, actually, over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Tyler, we're also looking for your answer.
Right.
You can also interact with us over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast or tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
Feel free to follow our Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com, and of course our voicemail line, 972-798-3830. That is where you can leave us a voicemail message, and we'd be happy to, you know, accept it and possibly play it on the show and respond in some way, humorous or otherwise. Maxwell, Mark, thank you both for joining
us both
this evening.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. No problem.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Always great to have you on. look forward to talking to you guys next week. And even if it doesn't work, we look forward to just getting your picks so we can, you know, have a... It'd be great to have, like, just a giant list of us all submitting top 10 picks for the summer. Because, one thing, because I love doing the math of these on the end of the summer. That's not true. I hate that part. But it'll be really cool to see just a giant competition happen for this. And with all that said, yeah, we're going to Summer Gamble next week. Week after that's Avengers. And, you know, then the summer is just full steam ahead after that point. So, with all of that in mind, thank you both again for joining us. Thank everyone for listening to our show. And until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
She looks a lot like Emilia Clarke, by the way.
I can see that, yeah.
Who's Emilia Clarke?
She is Daenerys on Game of Thrones.
Khaleesi.
Okay.
Yeah.
She has dragons. No big deal.